weekdays from 4.
105 Drive with Julian Clover.
Seeing you home. Cambridge
105. The Gadget Guide.
And as ever, we welcome Rob and Lawrence, and you've also got a guest with you as well.
Yes, we have. We're joined by James Newman, and James is going to be talking all about the mega processor in a few minutes' time. We'll come to that after, of course, the technology news. Now, what's going on? Of course, we've got the news of ARM Holdings being sold.
Yeah, that's been in Cambridge 105's news broadcast for the last week or so, and certainly big tech news for Cambridge. Lots of money coming into the area, and let's hope it just keeps ARM growing nicely.
Well, yes, obviously a very big name in the industry.
If you own anything mobile electronics, you own ARM chips.
You've pretty much got it. I think everyone's been saying in the iPhone, but it's in every smartphone, isn't it?
Pretty much every smartphone.
The news reports that we got from IRN, our national news provider. Initially, they mentioned Apple, and then later on, they added Samsung as well.
It's everything. If you own a smartphone,
your set-top box, your TiVo, your Skybox, they've all got ARM chips in them, so yeah. ARM are in everything.
They really are. And I'm pretty sure they shipped more processors than Intel. And Intel is the name you might know for your sort of home computers and laptops.
Yeah. They are big and into lots of things, as we said.
But what else has been going on in the news this week?
BT have had a little bit of a bad week. a couple of major outages on some of their data centre in London, and it's taken out lots of BT customers and PlusNet customers.
Now, I have to say, half of me feels sorry for them, because the cause behind this was that the data centre, which houses a lot of their networking equipment, this isn't their own data centre. This is run by, there were two unrelated data center problems run by other companies that they just happened to use the building of, suffered power cuts. And these things are designed very much from the ground up to not have power cuts. But alas, they did in both of these, in the London Docklands, Tilly City and Tilly House North. Part of me sort of says, well, it wasn't really BT's fault. The other part of me says, maybe you shouldn't have been relying on a single building to keep your entire network up. But certainly a large knock-on impact.
They supposedly have got over all the problems and it should all be running now. But there are lots of people saying, can you fix the internet yesterday? And nothing that any of us who work in IT could do about it.
No. You do have visions of someone maybe going into the data centre to go and plug a Hoover or a portable TV or something like that. Oh, no, sorry, just unplug the internet.
Yes. Other news. Yahoo.
Yes. Still going, aren't they?
Might have a new buyer soon. Verizon are apparently talking to them.
Oh, interesting. So, and Yahoo, of course, one of the internet pioneers, really.
Yeah.
Really sort of dropped off the radar a little bit in the last few years.
They still supply all of the webmail for BT customers.
That's true, yeah.
You know, they are still in people's faces, at least. So interesting to keep an eye on that one. Other new tech news that's related to your smartphones is Corning.
Yes, as in Gorilla Glass.
Pyrex and Gorilla Glass have announced Gorilla Glass 5.
Oh, okay. So this is the stuff that's meant to be very hard to hard to break when you drop your phone on the pavement.
It makes your phone scratch resistant. It makes it crack resistant. Okay, obviously, if you drop your phone, it could suffer the risk. But Gorilla Glass 5 should be a lot stronger. And they're saying it should survive 80% of drops from as high as 1.6 metres.
Oh, very good.
So they're working on average human carrying phone height now.
So no more of that slightly awkward sort of go into the, go out onto your drive, get out of your car, phone falls out of your pocket.
Yep.
Sort of thing.
Now, talking about wandering around with your phone.
Oh, yeah.
This is something that has been going around.
Is this Pokemon Go?
This is Pokemon Go.
Oh. Get rid of it.
So Pokemon Go...
Be very careful, Lawrence. I tell you, the Mill Road Cemetery is full of little Pokemons.
Is it? Okay.
I have to say, I'm more...
Do you have that from first-hand experience?
Second-hand experience.
Okay. I'm more amused by the plight of all the poor security guards around the country who have been told to keep people out of sort of looking suspicious around buildings. They've now got crowds of people turn up because there's a particularly rare Pokemon of some type.
So this is the global phenomenon of an interactive game that uses augmented reality. It uses your phone camera to put monsters into real world locations, and you can run around, walk around catching them.
And it's incredible, isn't it? Because the Niantic and the makers of the game and Nintendo, they've basically got themselves an army that they can command to go anywhere.
Yep.
Which is quite an incredible achievement.
It launched in the UK just over a week ago and promptly broke all of Pokemon's servers.
Yep.
They held off launching it in home turf, which is Japan, home of Pokemon, until today.
Oh, okay.
It promptly broke the servers. They have been holding off the rest of Europe because they're afraid of breaking the servers. So Germany apparently is next on the list, and they keep on adding more servers. So for those people who are into the game, there's a very important website someone's put up now, ispokemongodownornot.com.
Is this one of those things that just says no?
No, this one's actually got lots of stuff on it. It actually tells you how long it'll take you to log in with a Google login in the UK, how long it'll take in Europe or US, how long it'll take on to use a Pokemon account to log on. So right now it's saying that 98.7% chance of being able to place a lure, 208 millisecond latency. That's proper stats are out there now. So is Pokemon Go down or not.com?
Very good.
Bookmark that one.
Very good. That's the tech news. Let's say hello to James, James Newman. And thank you so much for joining us this evening, James. Welcome to Cambridge 105.
Thank you for inviting me.
The mega processor. If folks at home are listening, they've probably heard of the microprocessor sitting in maybe your computer. What's the mega processor all about?
So the mega processor is me trying to visualise what it was like to actually be inside a computer. So this, you might have heard that processors are made out of lots of little transistors, so small that you can't see them.
So I guess you might be a Tron fan then.
It's that kind of thing, yes. Getting right inside the machine, and with all the flashing lights. So I wanted to be able to see things happening. And the best way to do that was put little LEDs on everything.
I have to wonder, is this your background? Is this your job, or was...
So my day job is as an engineer, so mostly software, but also some digital logic.
Right.
So the I've used lots of chips in the past, but I've never actually got down into detail and actually able to see what they've actually been made out of.
And I guess this is something that's true for a lot of people, isn't it? You know, you use your smartphone, you use your smart TV, your smartwatch,
or your laptop,
or your laptop, and it's a little bit abstract. You don't necessarily get the feeling of.
Yes.
Of what it actually is, isn't it?
Yes, and how it's all put together.
And what, where, when you're saying sort of how it's put together, what sort of level is the mega processor going down to? Yeah, well, what were the building blocks of it?
So it goes right down to the single transistor. So you can see every single transistor that it's made of, and how they're arranged to form little operations, and how they're joined together to do bigger and more complicated things like adding numbers and so
forth. So I guess in terms of scale, a modern Intel i7 process has got billions of transistors.
Yes.
I'm guessing you didn't buy billions of transistors.
Not quite, no. I topped out at 40,000.
Okay.
So, these are fairly small things. I guess they're about the size of a match head. Yeah, that's a good example. And you've got 40,000 of these. How big did that end up being? How big did you expect it to end up being when you started?
Well, there was I thought I might build it. I did try to do a trial size and see how big it would be, and I thought it'd be about 2 meters a side, which seems reasonably sensible.
Yeah.
But then as I started to build it, I started to want to add more detail and make it a bit more self-explanatory.
Mm-hmm.
So put on words saying how things were, and also show how things were connected.
Right.
So it just grew slowly. So I was never really aware just how big it was until it was too late, really. So it ended up being about 10 metres, 30 foot long, and it's 2 metres tall.
And it's currently sitting...
in my living room. And I want my house back, please.
Presumably there's not a lot else sitting in your living room.
The sofa went about a year ago. I've still kept one of the armchairs, and I've got a TV tucked in the corner.
Right. And what does it do? You finished this recently.
Yep.
And we'll dig into a little bit more about the journey of building it in a few moments after the travel. But what does it do now that it works?
It's a computer, so it can do anything, of course.
I've watched James play a game on it.
Right.
Got to thank the BBC for that particular headline. But yes, it can play Tetris, but it can also play Noughts and Crosses.
Right.
And Life, John Conway's Game of Life.
Okay.
With the little blocks moving around,
yes,
and turning into,
yes,
planes and gliders.
Yes.
And
it's quite slow at that, but yes. So, and it's managed to beat me at Noughts and Crosses.
Hang on, isn't that one of those games that you can't possibly be beaten?
Yes, but you kind of get mesmerised by all the little lights. Okay. And then it kind of puts in a sneaky move.
And I suppose it ignored you if you asked for a nice game of chess.
I'm not going to put chess on.
Not quite up there with Deep Blue yet.
No.
Okay, well, we'll find out more about the mega processor in a couple of minutes after the travel.
The Gadget Guide.
Now let's get back to Bob and Lawrence, and a bit of surprise if you're looking at us on Facebook.
Yes.
Well, if you're not, go to facebook.com/Cambridge105. We're live as a video stream.
Yes, it's we've literally pulled the technology together at the last minute. I was still installing sound card drivers as we started the segment, but it seems to be working. The laptop's telling me that it's overloaded, which I think is something to do with the heat.
Won't be the first time in this studio.
No, indeed. But much more importantly, so go and check out the video there. You can see Lawrence, myself, and our guest James. And James, we're talking about your mega processor. Mm-hmm. I won't say it's the world's largest modern computer, but it's maybe size per processing capacity.
So you've scaled up what is probably the same sort of compute powers as ZX Spectrum?
Something like that, yes.
Something like that. To what sort of scale? I mean, if you were scaling up, you know, the Airfix model against the real plane, have you worked out the scale ratio yet?
No, but it's got to be
thousands to one type thing?
Yeah, something of that order.
Yeah. Yes. So we can walk up to it and see transistors, and because you put an LED on each one, we can see that it's doing some work.
Yeah.
Now, you spoke earlier on about being able to see the operations. What sort of operations actually make up a processor? You know, what's the building blocks of something?
Okay, so there's lots of layers in constructing a processor. And the lowest layer is what we call logic operations.
Mm.
Simple things called AND gates and OR gates. So...
So what would one of those do?
So an AND gate is really dumb. All it can do is work out if all of its inputs are high, then it says, oh, they're all high. Otherwise, it says they're low.
So that literally is this, if this, and that. This,
yes.
Then yes. And if either of them are a no, then it's a no.
Yeah.
And what you say you sort of build up from that, and how do you get from something like that to something that can, let's say, add two numbers together?
So you need about half a dozen of those kind of simple gates to join together, and it's going to be really difficult over radio.
I think you've got a wonderful demonstration piece here, and I think maybe we need to get some photos of that on the website at some point. But
mm-hmm. Yes. Well, also doing a series of videos, as well as the mega processor. There's, if you go to the YouTube channel, I've got a set of tutorials which go from a single transistor and then two transistors and how they work, and that's a series in progress, but at the moment it's already at the point where we can do arithmetic.
Oh, right. So what's
megaprocessor.com is your website?
My main website for the megaprocessor is www.megaprocessor.com,
mm-hmm.
and it's got a YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/c/megaprocessor.
Excellent.
Now, you sort of had to add up numbers. In terms of visualising this, you've got these little lights on, mm-hmm. on all of the transistors, but... You visualised it very nicely at the larger scale as well, haven't you? Because a processor isn't just one block, is it? It's, mm-hmm. it's made up of these higher level blocks.
Yes. So as the thing is, as I said, it builds up in layers. So you can see the lowest level, these little AND gates and OR gates, and then they're joined together in bigger blocks to make the adders, mm. and then there's bigger blocks which. So one of the big blocks is, say, the state machine, which is what controls everything.
So that's how you move from, OK, I've been doing this, to I'm doing the next thing.
Yeah.
And I've got to ask, it's very large. How fast is it?
It's fast enough. Do you want numbers?
But probably no. So
it's about
by comparison to, let's say, my mobile phone.
OK, it's about a millionth as powerful.
So right.
It can do sums at about a millionth of the rate. And it's got about a millionth of the amount of memory. But it's much more beautiful.
And presumably also starts up much faster.
Yes.
Yeah, when you turn it on, it's...
It's pretty much there, yes, the lights are there for you. But for a lot of the time, I'm actually going to run it a lot slower than it can run.
Okay.
Because its top speed is 8 kilohertz, but that's too fast for the human eye to be able to see what's going on.
Yeah, your LEDs sort of look on rather than flashing.
Yes. So I'll slow it down and we can... make it do one calculation a minute, you know, at that rate, and you can actually see everything.
So you'd see the calculation run through all of the components of the processor. You'd be able to follow it almost sort of one side to the other side?
Yes, it is electronic, so everything happens instantly, but you can freeze it at a moment in time and see the state of everything and how everything's connected and why it's going to do what it's going to do. But then when you hit the button to make it do it, it's fast.
And what is what's the dream of this project? What, you know, is in your living room at the moment? Where would you love to see it go?
Hopefully long term it'll go into a museum or something like that. So I've got some discussions going on and it's looking quite promising at the moment.
Right, presumably somewhere with a fair amount of space to dedicate
to
it.
Yes, it's the logistics, which are the details of the logistics on will it fit and how to actually make it work when it gets there.
Mm.
I have to ask, how long and what went wrong when you were building this?
Right. So it started as a twinkle in my eye about maybe 5 years ago now, I suppose. And to begin with, it was mostly just research and ideas. I wasn't expecting to build it. I was just thinking, how would you do it? What would it look like? And then I found myself building it.
as one does.
As I was as surprised as anyone else, really. And then it's... lots of things have gone wrong. The worst part was when the wrong transistors arrived.
Ooh.
So, as I said, I've built...
And I'm guessing a fair few of those.
Yeah, so it's 40,000 in the whole contraption.
And you've soldered each of these by hand?
Yes. The estimate at the moment is just over 250,000 solder joints. Anyway, I put in right towards the end, my last order for transistors was for 4,000 of them. I ordered the right transistors. The packing list said they were the transistors I wanted. They looked like the transistors I wanted. So I soldered them as if they were the transistors
times 4,000.
Times 4,000. And that was a really bad time when I got the first... Because at that time I thought... I knew everything worked, so I just built up a batch of boards, the last batch of boards, I thought. And then I started to test them at the end, and the first one was rubbish, and then the second one was rubbish, and I thought, what's going on here? And then I worked out...
You start doubting yourself a little bit.
Yes, so I actually kind of junked that board I was testing and built up a whole new one, and that failed catastrophically, and then I realised just what happened, and I hadn't actually finished, and I had another month or so of soldering to go. That was
but now it's done.
And now it's done.
Excellent.
So, 40,000 transistors, how much wire?
I think it's kilometres. So kilometres of the stuff.
And then I suppose, like all computers, it's drawing power, but probably a lot more than your average computers.
Not a huge amount more. Maybe twice as much as your laptop.
Okay. That's not at all bad.
And if I turned off all the LEDs, it would be a fraction.
Okay. So it's the LEDs that are chewing the power because you're adding a visual element.
90% of it, I think.
And does it get warm?
No. Also, it's in a big room, so it's... No trouble at all, really.
Very good. Well, James, thank you so much for talking to us. If you want to see the video of it in action, that's up on the YouTube channel as well, is it?
Yes, there's two playlists there. One is a set of videos I took during integration,
right?
Which finishes with the tour at the end. And then there's a second playlist, which is the little tutorials.
Very good.
Explain how things are.
Well, James, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
That sounds fascinating. It kind of my mind goes back to, wasn't the comparison made between the processing power in our average smartphone these days and what was used for the original Apollo missions? It's kind of that sort of comparison going on, maybe.
Yes, it's about the same actually, because the Apollo was famous for having the power of a calculator. I think. That's maybe where the
HP 12C, I think it was, wasn't it? For all the geeks who collect calculators. Yeah.
But thanks very much for coming, and we'll try and give people a view of that YouTube video as well if we can.